Poder Aprender, el podcast que te ayuda a aprender idiomas, hobbies y skills de manera más efectiva. Acá hablamos sobre hábitos de aprendizaje, práctica deliberada y estrategias para aprender mejor. Mi nombre es Walter Freiberg y te invito a desarrollar tu poder de aprender para alcanzar tus metas personales y profesionales.
Today, I have a very special guest from the UK. She's a coach and she works on leadership. She has a lot of experience in corporate and she has a lot to share in terms of learning. And we are going to have a very fun conversation. Welcome, Rachel, to Poder Aprender.
Walter, thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm super excited to be here and to talk all things personal development. I'm going to say healthily obsessed with that. So I'm super excited for our conversation today.
Thank you. That's wonderful. And would you introduce yourself? Would you share a little bit about who you are and what you've been doing in the world?
Of course. Yes. So I'm the founder of an organization called Elevar. We specialize in leadership development. And I guess really it's a lot about helping people with behavioral change to feel better, to be better, and to love what they are doing. I've had the business for the last 10 years, but prior to that, I had some senior leadership roles in corporate. We partner with some high profile brands, with some professional athletes and lots of senior business leaders. I also have a passion for speaking. So last year I was regional president for the Professional Speaking Association in the UK and Ireland. And it would be remiss of me not to mention that I'm a mum and a wife. In fact, the other way around. Let me do that the other way around. Wife and a mum. to my wonderful husband, Alan, and my two gorgeous boys, they're 9 and 7 now, and I'm a bit of a country girl at heart. So when I've not got my head in a personal development book or podcast or something like that, you will find me, swimming in a lake, out on my mountain bike, or riding a horse if I can.
That's beautiful, and that's another shared passion of both of us. I also like speaking. I used to be a Toastmaster. I'm not in the organization anymore because there's no Toastmasters in Uruguay. Probably I would be participating, but I used to be a member in Argentina and that was so much fun.
It's so much fun. And just an amazing community is, I think, one of the biggest things that I've taken away from being part of that. And, we're going to be talking about personal development. And I think one of the things that I was really reflecting on last week, so I did a keynote to a large conference last week. And on the way there, I was reflecting just how many people had helped me get to that place. And, there were lots of people. There was the lady that helped me with my outfit. There was people who had helped me in terms of my own mindset for it. People who had helped me think about the structure of the thing. People who had actually said, yes, it's okay to share these materials, Rachel. There would be so many people. And I think when it comes to personal growth, personal development, having that network of people that can support you is so important.
Yes. And that network, and I would say that even to start with, like that openness and that willingness to learn and that receptivity. And that's wonderful what you're saying. This is not something that you did on your own. It was not just by reading books. And I know that there's people who get a lot of value from books. I love personal development books. And it's not the same as having like additional support and the presence of somebody, an expert, somebody who is really there and can help you become the person you really want to be.
Absolutely. And, I know you coach as well, Walter. And, I stand here as somebody who has had and continues to have a coach in my life, and I have done consistently for the last 10 years. And when I say consistently, that means meeting with my coach every 2 weeks. Also have another coach that I sometimes work with as well, so on some specific things, and mentors as well. So yeah, I think it's so important to have people that will challenge us, help us see things differently, reflect, and kind of keep us on track.
Yeah. And talking about learning and skill building, I know that you talk about capacity versus capability. That's one of the things that you talk about. And I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how this applies to leaders and to learners in general, in terms of managing their energy and not just their time or the skills they have.
So it massively impacts, I think, so much of, particularly in the corporate environment, which is where I operate a lot of training courses and things will be around helping people to gain the capability or the skill to do things. So a very simple example would be helping leaders to have the skills and the capabilities to have difficult conversations or giving and receiving feedback, for example. And where the capacity comes in, and this is what I think is so crucial and fundamental to any leadership development, and in fact, any development per se, so leaders or, or learners, is if we haven't got the capacity to be able to meet the demands, then that's going to feel very uncomfortable. And the way that we show up is going to be very different. And by capacity, yes, that's the mood, energy, our ability to deal with and our bandwidth to deal with stress. But it's also how are we resolving or maybe even regulating the emotional stuff that's going on for all of us, you know, because we don't operate in a vacuum and other people and other things are likely to trigger us emotionally. And that will impact on things like, you know, our cognitive capacity to think clearly, to process information, to be able to take on board new things and to learn, to feel safe enough. So, you know, if that capacity is depleted, we'll often have a greater negative bias. And so it will impact all of those things. So it has a huge, huge impact.
So there's a difference between knowing how to do something and having the skill and having the capability versus really being able to do something about that in terms of, because I need to have the capacity, the energy, and being in that that is conducive to taking action. I love that distinction. That's beautiful.
Yeah. And so often, you know, in the corporate environment in particular, there's all the courses that will focus on helping people to have the skills and the capabilities. But where is the conversation around how are we making sure that people have got the capacity to show up and to be the leaders that they want to be? And, you know, very often corporations will have leadership behavioral frameworks that they'll be expecting leaders to operate in a certain way. But are they truly equipping those leaders well? And are they providing the right sort of environments where people can show up at their best? Because people don't think psychologically safe or trusted or engaged. They feel those things. You know, the right environments for people to be able to feel safe enough to be able to learn or to take a risk or to try something new is critical. And I think when we focus on how people feel and their capacity enables those two parallel outcomes that are often seen as distinctive or different. And that is, one, it helps people to perform at an individual level. So from an individual performance to be able to do that, but also it creates the cultures then as well that organizations so often want.
Yeah, it becomes a good example for the others, and it's like it starts being more contagious and people start picking up on those things even when they don't want it. It's because they work what they see around. That's so wonderful. And I know that you combine neuroscience and behavioral science in your coaching. And I'm curious about like how you are using these tools as a coach to help people manage or work with their capacity and working on their needs.
Well, I think first of all, I need to put a disclaimer out here to say I am not a neuroscientist. But one of the things that I have done over the last 20 years is I have been healthily obsessed, as I said at the beginning, with understanding the practical psychology, the things that we can apply to make a difference to the quality of our lives and our experiences. and to help us put us in a better position and a better place to be more resourceful, to, you know, be able to better influence what is happening and, you know, and kind of where we're taking ourselves. Because ultimately, without getting too heavy, you know, the world is a, you know, I think is an increasingly uncertain place to be. And so I think we're a very interesting point in terms of humanity and where we are with all of that. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that I do know that we can have control over is how we choose to respond to the things that are happening around us, and yeah, and how we show up in that. So I think that's the first thing just to say in terms of a disclaimer, and just to answer your question, which, forgive me, see if I've remembered this correctly, I think was, well, how do you apply that behavioral science and neuroscience to the work that I do? Wow. Okay. Yes. That's a big question. So there's, there's a lot. And I think for me, a big part of this, so I am a certified health coach, and I also work with Professor Chris Beedy, who is a professor of cognition and neuroscience and also of evolutionary anthropology at Oxford and Kent University here in the UK. And a lot of the work that we do, and this has been a huge part of my own learning and development, is remembering that it's, you know, it's not just the brain operating by itself, but it's actually, it's our bodies as well. And what is happening will affect us. And so having good neurobiological strategies to help people to be able to have the energy to show up well, and that simple stuff like your grandma told you, you know, am I sleeping well? Is it regular? Am I getting the nutrition? Am I hydrated? Am I getting daylight and nature and movement? You know, simple stuff, but so often we either don't respect that or we allow life to run away with us, that we kind of forget some of our biology that is fundamental for us to being able to have some of that, the energy and the capacity and the resources and to be able to manage our mood well, to show up in the best possible way. And then I guess from an emotional point of view and an emotional side of things, I think, you know, kind of whether that is reframing, whether that is looking at where we're focused on, what meanings we're choosing to attach to certain events, are we telling ourselves stories? Language, which I know is huge in your area of work, like what's the language that we're using, because that can be incredibly evocative and it can intensify or dissipate how we are feeling about certain things. So being mindful, and we have patterns and habits of language, so watching what we do with all of that, I think, can be some enormously useful regulation reframing strategies. But ultimately, with emotions, if we can, looking at how we resolve those. And that's not always possible. You know, it's not always possible to resolve those emotional things. But, you know, where we can, if it's something, how can we fix it? And if it's someone that's upset us in some way, how can we maybe talk to them to resolve the issue? I don't know if that's, I've tried to, yeah, the bit of an overview, but also try to be tangible in how I've answered that question.
That was great. Yeah, that was wonderful. And I appreciate that you mentioned reframes. And that's something that we often do as coaches. We help people to reframe their reality. And there's a very common way of seeing burnout, and it's connected to burnout. It's connected as something around time management, like a time management problem. And I know that you, with the work that you do, is help people to frame it differently, and you help leaders to think where this comes from. Can you tell us more about that, the reframes you help people to do around burnout?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I suppose in working with a lot of senior leaders as I do, this is something I get to see quite a bit of. And I think in some ways, high achievers are potentially more susceptible to this. And, you know, it's looking at maybe what's happening and what's going on. So how much of the burnout is due to, how much of it is due to workload versus habits? We were just talking about habits around all the things your grandma would have told you to, you know, pay attention to. And how much of this is habitual regulation? I had a situation myself with burnout where You know, I thought I had worked my way to the ideal job, you know, been through college, university, into the corporate world, worked my way up. And I can remember the afternoon that it happened. I was in my glass-fronted office. I was preparing to go into the boardroom. And instead of walking out the door, I found myself lying on the floor, staring up at the ceiling tiles. And I had collapsed. I couldn't think. I couldn't breathe, which was absolutely incredibly frightening. And it was because of some of these habits that not over weeks or months, but in some cases over years, I'd let creeped in, you know, So habits like of just working more and more, for example, just getting through from the, you know, let's get to the weekend, let's just get to the next holiday, let's just get past this project, and then telling myself that it would all be okay. You know, I was disrespecting some of those things that we were talking about, like your grandma would tell you to do. I was disrespecting that, and I felt enormously guilty because I was neglecting the most important relationship in my life at that time as well. And at some point, you know, and this is what happened to me in my case, body just went, time out. That's that, like, you ain't going to do anymore. I'm putting you on the floor. And I often describe that moment a bit like being slapped around the face with a great big wet fish. I don't know. It was almost like life was just going, you've got to wake up. And I think this is one of the challenges with burnout is that particularly with high achievers, we kind of go, oh, I'm a bit stressed. I'm okay. I'm getting on with it. And we push on until the point that we just don't realize sometimes that we are going to, you know, we're going to run into that wall. And so in terms of how I help clients, it's actually a real mix. It's not just the reframing. There may be certain things that the reframing is helpful for, but it's also about looking at the biology and what's going on biologically for them as well. And where you can replacing some of those habits, because it's clinically predicted, you know, if you are in a situation where you are not regularly restoring your battery, if we think about our phones, you know, I think we often pay more attention to making sure these things are charged up than we do ourselves. You know, if you aren't regularly restoring yourself, and if you aren't able to get resolution on those things that are emotionally triggering you, then you've got to look at really healthy ways to regulate that, and not for too long either, because otherwise it's clinically predictive of, you know, reduced cognitive capacity, increased negative bias, poor performance, disengagement from work, substance abuse, which I say, and people might think, oh, not me. But actually, how many people do we know that need coffee to get going in the morning and then a wine to relax at the end of the day and, you know, be able to switch off? You know, so it is clinically and then it is clinically predictive of burnout or departure from an organization. So you've really got to pay attention to, you know, not just the, you know, the reframing is exceptionally useful, but it's also about addressing some of those underlying causes as well. And in doing so, increasing people's bandwidth to be able to deal with what's going on. I think sometimes people go, it's the workload. And in some cases, it might absolutely be the workload. But we all know that something that comes to us one day when we've not slept well, or when we're really hungry, we don't have the bandwidth to deal with that thing in the same way that on another day, when we feel fully restored, we can cope with it so much better. So that's a long answer.
Yeah. So we don't have the capacity, basically. Right.
Got it. And the full picture. Yeah.
Yeah. And maybe it's like, because we don't use external chargers or a battery as a phone or a computer, it sounds like we have unlimited battery so that we don't need to recharge ourselves, or that is not depleted. And that's not reality. That's not what happens in our lives.
No, absolutely. And, you know, it's not always easy, and it's not always part of cultures in organizations as well. So I will work with senior leadership teams under immense stress, challenge, and change. And it will be about helping ensure that they have got some of the right habits and knowledge and understanding of the importance of stuff like this. So that perhaps instead of sitting on Zoom or a Teams meeting, if they can, they take the call on an old-fashioned telephone when they can get outside and get some daylight and get a little bit of movement in while they do those things. So it's not always about having to stop to restore. Sometimes it's about how can we integrate that restoration within the culture of the workplace and within the habits that we have. And back to what we said right at the beginning, which was the importance of community to help support, you know, that's when this becomes really powerful, because at the point where you go, I can't take a moment to go and get my lunch or to get a drink or to have a wee or to, you know, I don't know, go for a walk around the block. That's the moment when you must. And when you've got people around you that are like, hang on a minute, you've been sat there a while, or have you been out today? Like, come on, let's take this outside in an eye throw.
Yeah, right.
It becomes super helpful.
Yeah, and I believe that it's also true for us as coaches. Sometimes when we are doing most of our work, some coaches, I know I'm one of them who work mostly online, who meet with clients online. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that there are many other options available. And I heard of coaches who, well, there's the option to, depending on how we design our work, we can meet in person and we can meet with clients on the phone. We can arrange to meet with clients by walking, doing what this year I learned that there's a term for that, doing a walkie session. You're doing a walkie session. So you're walking, your client is walking, and you don't even have to be in the same place, in the same city. And there's things that happen also when we are in terms of what I've been doing conversation when we are having a conversation while we are walking or while we're seated. And that's interesting as well.
Hugely so. And I often find that if I'm feeling a little bit stuck or I'm needing to re-energize myself, we know that by standing up, we get more oxygen to the brain. And often I'll be doing coaching session. So I will be the coachee and I need to think about this differently. So I'll stand up and I'll start to just like move my body and shake around a little bit just to like, okay, like just get moving. And so another coach and a dear friend of mine, her name's Leslie Roberts. She's written a book which is all about coaching outdoors and just the benefits of that. Because, you know, again, if we think about restoring ourselves and that restoration, nature, daylight and movement will all be exceptionally restorative. So will the social aspect of being with a coach, of somebody that you trust and that you know is looking out for your best interests. So all of that is massively restorative, and you are, you know, able to restore in these different ways, all while doing the same activity.
And speaking about trust, I wonder about the concept of confidence, and especially when we're talking about a group setting or leader, can be also leadership in other contexts. I'm thinking in our community. And what's the connection or the interrelation between leading coming from this, doing this leadership work from a place of calm and groundedness versus being from more agitation or excitement and from trying to impose authority?
This is such a powerful question that you asked me, and it sort of sent me into a bit of deep reflection here, really, because when we can steady ourselves and we can ground ourselves, others feel that. And I think that allows us to lead from a better place in terms of, you know, clarity, of being able to connect better, being able to listen better, ask the right questions. And so I think that calm and groundedness that we can bring as leaders, whether, as you say, it's community or in a group or leadership setting, doesn't matter. You could be the leader of your, you know, leader in your family. Being able to come at it from that place allows us to be far more open and responsive in a positive way to what we are being presented with. And so, and I think the confidence question or thing is an interesting one, because we won't necessarily always have that confidence. We may need to be looking instead for the courage to do the thing, or to, you know, sometimes it's just the courage to show up and, you know what, I'm going to be present and centered and me, and I'm going to trust that that's enough, that I'm enough, that I can then respond and dance elegantly with whatever shows up. So I think sometimes we kind of wait to feel confident, but actually that's the wrong thing to look for. I'd say look for the courage instead.
It's not a requirement to have to be confident, to feel confident. We can tap on courage.
Absolutely. There's so many leaders that I work with in really senior positions who will still, like, and I suspect that they are viewed as very confident and very sure of themselves. And yet actually, you know, when you realize that, as you will know, Walter, from working with lots of different people, we are more similar than we realize. And they too have things that they doubt about themselves or that they're not sure about, you know. And so, yeah, remembering that. And I think being aligned to our values, what we care about most, and staying true to that, I think really helps with that groundedness and how we show up.
Can you tell us more about the role of emotional intelligence when we are learning to influence or to engage with teams? And this is a broad question.
This is a real, gosh, yeah, no, okay. So when we're looking to engage with teams, well, I think I mentioned this earlier, and that is that people don't think engaged, they feel it. So if we can understand what it is that enables people to feel engaged, that is what, you know, that's super helpful. And so one of the things that Professor Chris Beede always talks about in the work that I do with him, because I think this simplifies things in an enormously helpful way, and that is that the things that trigger us as emotionally as human beings can be boiled down to 5 social needs that we have as human beings that have been part of our evolutionary, you know, evolvement. And those 5 things are: we need to feel included, we need to feel we have an element of certainty, we need to feel that we have autonomy, we need to feel that we have that we're fairly treated, and we need to feel valued and that we belong, or that we have that sense of status. And whenever either, you know, one or more of those needs get triggered, that's when people start to feel emotional dysregulation, and things don't feel good. So being able to understand they're the things that are likely to trigger people, how can you help people to feel more engaged? Well, it is about how you help them to feel like they're included, like they have the autonomy to, you know, not micromanaged. It's meeting all of those social needs, because they're the social needs that, as we were evolving as human beings, those ancestors of ours that prioritize those needs were more likely to survive. And so when they get triggered, albeit that if we're not included in the team, I don't know, get together, it's probably not going to be life-threatening to us anymore, we still get triggered in that way because of our biology and how we've evolved as human beings. Yeah, I trust that that's helpful to listeners to maybe think in terms of those 5 social needs and how you can, you know, as a leader, if you're meeting those needs of your people, then things should feel pretty good.
And in your experience, what's the one that's typically neglected? Like from those 5, if you had to say like this, typically this is something that you want to pay more attention because that's something that you might be neglecting. What would that be?
So it really does vary. It really does vary depending on the individual and the situation. You could easily imagine a scenario whereby there's not clarity around the role or what's happening in the organization or, you know, the project or what we're working on. And you can see how that would trigger somebody. you could also, I think, see quite easily how some people might be feeling like they're micromanaged or they don't have the autonomy to be able to approach the work in the way that they would like to approach the work and get that work done, and it would be triggering. You can imagine how some people may feel that they deserve promotion or some form of recognition. And if they're not getting that, that it's triggering them from that status or that attachment or belonging perspective. So yeah, there's, it doesn't take much imagination to start to see. And if we were to take an example like an organizational redesign, so whereby people's roles are at risk and they might be completely redesigning the structure in the team. Oh my gosh, it's possibly going to trigger every single one of those. And really challenging then for a leader in that kind of, and I've got that happening with one of my organizations that I work with at the moment, and very challenging for the leaders to be able to provide that, you know, that certainty and to enable people to feel like they've been treated fairly and, you know, let them know that, yes, they are valued and this isn't a personal reflection, but it's actually to do with the business and where the business is heading and what's right for the business. And it's about the role. It's not about them personally or that. You know, there's some important conversations to be had to allow some of those messages and things to be managed well.
That's something that a leader can learn, right? They can get better at.
Gosh, yes. It's interesting to me how many people fall into leadership roles because they're particularly good at the discipline that they do. And so the next progression, the natural progression, is then to look after a team doing that particular technical skill or ability. And yet actually leadership takes a whole nother set of skills, and some people, yes, of course, will be naturally good at it. And, you know, for others, it can be really tough. It can be really tough, but absolutely can be learned.
That's good news. That's great. And if someone in our audience is, they're listening right now and they feel exhausted, and at the same time, they want to reach something, they have high aspirations, they're ambitious, either on their professional goals or their learning goals, personal goals. And what's one small tip, something they can try to see high performance and make it sustainable at the same time?
What a great question. I love that question. And I'd love to know what you think about this as well. I really identify with this. I identify with this personally as well, just to be like, lay it all out and lay it bare. And if you'll allow me, there's probably a couple of things that I'm going to share that I found enormously helpful.
Yeah, please.
So is that you must prioritize that restoration. So restoration is not the reward for getting the job done or for the project concluding or for achieving the thing. Restoration is a key input to you being able to perform well to get to that end result. So restoration is not the reward. It's a critical input. So that's the first, a lovely story very quickly. One of my clients who he is a big, really keen cyclist. And he messaged me the other day to go, "Oh my, Rachel, I get it. Because I'd encouraged him to be a scientist of himself and to, you know, just to see what difference it made when he got out on his bike and then came back to the work instead of pushing through all the work and then going out on the bike. And he was like, "Oh my God, I came back and I was so much more efficient. I was so much more creative and I had more clarity and all of the rest of it." He's like, I get it now. It's not the restoration is not the reward for doing the thing. It's a key input into it. So that would be one thing. With that restoration, something I found enormously helpful, which I've learned from Brian Johnson, is to have base level targets for your restoration and elite targets. So one of the things that I think can be enormously, particularly if you're a high achiever, you're like, "I'm going to go to the gym 4 times a week. That's going to be me, you know."
And no matter what, yeah, I'm going.
And if I don't go 4 times a week, I'm feeling a bit disappointed with myself, right? So the whole idea is we don't just have one target of like, "I got to go to the gym 4 times a week. We have base level targets that even when we are in those days where we are paying the price because it's a critical project deadline, we're away from, you know, we're traveling away from home, or, you know, like it's like there's an intense period of time, you can still hit those base level targets. They are so easy that you can do it. So instead of going to the gym, base level target might be, I'm going to do squats while I brush my teeth in the morning, you know, because I know every morning I'm going to brush my teeth. I can absolutely find time to do those squats, for example. So it's having these base and elite targets so that, you know, when you have a what Brian Johnson would call a bubble wrap day, which is when you can absolutely do, you know, fill your boots on all of the stuff, or a bubble wrap week, you can do all of those things. You can do your elite targets. But the thing is, bubble wrap days are few and far between for most of us. And most of the time we're like out in the wild, like just trying to hack our way through life, make things happen. And so then it's about, well, okay, if I can hit elite some of the time, you know, but mostly that I am making sure I'm always hitting my base level targets, then I know I'm staying on the right trajectory. And that's been enormously helpful for me in terms of, one, not kind of punishing myself if I'm not getting to do these things. And two, just making sure that I'm, you know, always staying on the right track. And the third thing I'll say, and then I will shut up. The third thing is just that the third thing I've learned that I think has been enormously helpful is sometimes things just take time, and don't completely kill yourself off for some fabricated time frame that you just made up, that you said, well, I wanted to achieve this by, I don't know, in the next 6 months or by that year or what have you. And, you know, so long as you are continuing to make progress and move forwards and it's aligned with your values and who you most want to become, keep going. Walter, yeah. What you could say about
that? Thank you. I love that. I appreciate that you quote Brian Johnson, and I follow him, and I really like what he shares, and that's so much great stuff. And you asked me about my opinion, my take on this. Would you like to hear it?
Love to hear it, yes.
I totally agree with what you said. And as you were starting to share your answer, I was thinking, first I thought my answer would be something like doing less, or trying to focus on minimizing, or doing like less things, focus on the most essential things that would be in line with what you share about prioritizing. And then I was thinking also, maybe what is important to me is to remember who I am and what is deeply important to me. And this is connected to the work. And we as coaches, we are very deep into personal development. We get coaching. And we did explorations around that. And sometimes we forget. We know who we are and we just forget. And one of the meditation teachers, and I'm really into meditation and spiritual growth, one of my teachers, the way he translates mindfulness, this is Buddhism. He says, mindfulness is keeping things in mind. When you're practicing mindfulness of the breath, you are keeping it in your mind. So you're keeping it present. And I think that a big issue many times is that we forget just what's really important to us. And I really like what you say about like this, having different targets. And I can tell you examples in terms of my meditation practice, in terms of the amount of time, and then to the different types of progress.
Yeah.
Because I had times, I remember the first meditation course that I did was a silent retreat. And at the end, it was very intensive. Those are the Vipassana retreats, 10-day retreats. And at the end, you're encouraged to continue the practice 2 hours a day, 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour in the evening. And most people, after maybe they do that for a week or two, and then it's like, it's not sustainable anymore. And they say, okay, I'm not meditating anymore. I just can't do it. And it becomes this thing, all or nothing. And it took a long time for me to learn that I could also meditate for 5 minutes, yeah, or 10 minutes. That was available to me. So that's something that I tried. And it can be humbling, like in terms of, but I'm like an experienced meditator. How would I set up for less than 2 hours or 1 hour or 30 minutes. And still, that was very helpful to remember that I'm a meditator, and that's something important to me and who I am, my identity, and who I want to become, the type of progress that I want to make. And the other thing that is also connected to meditation, and it's also connected to many other learnings, is that, and this is also related to what you say at the end, there's progress that it's not visible. It's not immediately visible. And I think that's the case with meditation. And sometimes I was attached to the think something fancy or that I would be, I don't know, beaming light or what. And there was the progress that on the meditation practice, like when you are on the cushion, when you're doing the practice, and then there's the progress that you're doing in your life, like the way you relate to things or happens and the way you're being. So it took time for me as well to recognize that there's the inner progress and there's the outer progress. And now I also put this into practice in my coaching practice, and that's helpful in the work that I do with others, because sometimes it looks like, oh, this person is not making progress. Maybe that's not what we see on the outside. Maybe there's things going on moving inside.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You articulated that so beautifully. And I've just finished working with a chief executive officer of a company here in the UK. We've just been coaching together for 6 months, and we've been talking just around how many of those shifts people are seeing it externally now. But, you know, it's him remembering and trusting as well that through some of those external practices, things have changed internally. And when our internal world changes, like everything changes, that is, yeah, you put it across much better than I did, but that it is, it's that combination of being able to do the practice and do the thing, but then it also shifts things inside as well. So the same way, I guess I feel like I came in here and was talking about the importance of biology alongside the neurology. It's also about what's the, you know, the changes on the inside as well as on the outside. It's all whole.
Yeah. Rachel, is there anything that I haven't asked you that you would like me to ask you that you want to share more about before completing this conversation?
Only that I'd like to ask you a question. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So, Walter, given the things that we've been talking about today, I know, what would be your top thing or takeaway for the, or like, what's your main thing that you would want to leave people, your audience, with from today? Because you've got so much experience and in some different fields to me. So I'd just be really interested to know, what if there was one thing that people were remembering or taking away from our conversation today, what do you feel is most important?
Thank you for asking that, and thank you for asking me a question. And my takeaway would be the distinction that we brought and how you develop that on capability versus capacity, keeping that in mind, being mindful of that in our learnings, at work, in our relationships, at home. That would be my takeaway. And I love how you connected this with lifestyle practices, with simple practices our grandma might recommend, and that sometimes we're not doing that, me included. Sometimes we neglect those practices from time to time.
And none of us are perfect. You know, it's like, and if you may indulge me, one question more.
Yeah.
I know you've talked about your meditation and mindfulness practice, but from a restoration point of view, what other habits do you have that you know that really help to restore you?
You have to share something, or I'd like to share something around this. I'm using a Whoop band, and
yes!
you know that. So Brian Johnson uses and endorses this band. And you know what's been interesting to find? When I practice meditation, my recovery is 5% more, increases by 5%, like from 0 to 100%. And that varies from person to person. And that was very encouraging to me. So you asked me about other practices, but I wanted to share this because you know that was meaningful to me. When I find like more reasons to do what I want to do, it strengthens it. Like maybe I have this meditation practice. I started with the meditation practice because I wanted to deepen my spiritual practice, and I have spiritual goals and I wanted to put that into practice. And I know that's important to practice meditation. That's not the only thing. And when I know that that's also helpful in terms of my recovery, and even by this data, that was like encouraging. Like that was okay. So that's one reason more you have to continue doing this. So don't stop it, because there's value in this. And look, even the body is responding to that. So meditation, for sure, that's something that helps me. And well, I really like music and I play the piano. So sometimes for me, like, listening to certain type of music, relaxing music or playing the piano or singing, that definitely, those are things that fill my cup, as that they help with recovery and restoration. And having conversations with people like you, with growth-oriented people, that's also very restorative. Yeah.
Another podcast with you playing and singing with the piano. I think that would be absolutely amazing. And I'm so excited to hear about the Whoop Band, because, yeah, I have read about them. I know a little bit about them. And so but you're the first person I've met that is using one. And just that whole raise such a valuable point that we've not talked about, which is like, what are we recording and measuring and keeping our eye on? And the Whoop Band will really help you to do that. And, you know where maybe you just need to fine tune or tweak things. But I just love the fact that you now know that you are 5%, you know, more productive when you are doing that. That's so cool. I love that.
Right. Yeah. And I have to say that I learned that also through a podcast. Because there's a great podcast that I'm a fan of that's called Super Hábitos, and that's from Argentina. And it's all about productivity and personal development. And I remember I heard them for the first time in 2022. And I remember they were already using the Whoop Band. They had been using that for a couple of years, and they were inspired by someone else who had used it. And so I heard their episodes and for a couple of years until I got mine, and I really like it. And you know, this one of my systems to being held accountable, and I have no problem with being held accountable. Is that being held accountable? Being held accountable?
No, being held accountable. Yes.
Being held accountable. Thank you. Yeah. So, and that's one of the systems that I use, and I have no problem with that. And I'm okay with whatever it says. Sometimes, like, if you don't have a good night's sleep, the data would not be nice, and that's okay with me. And that's good information that I can use.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, we haven't actually explained what the Whoop Band is, but yes, it is like a personal tracker. It tracks things like, you know, your sleep and your movement and all.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yes. Didn't we? So sorry to everyone.
It's a fitness tracker, like a fitness band. Yeah.
Tracker that doesn't know what a Whoop Band is. I think they were particularly designed for elite athletes originally. So I think it's the brand of them.
Yeah. I'm no elite athlete. And I still use the band because, you know, these are, and now that lately they've been catering to more like a general population. And that's something that we can use. And at the beginning, it was more used mostly by elite athletes. And now it's more like widespread. And it's great. I love it.
Brilliant.
So, Rachel, you have something to share with our audience? They want to get in contact with you, learn more about you, or is there anything that you'd like to share with them before completing this conversation?
Well, it's always so wonderful to hear from people. So if you are listening in and you would like to get in touch, I would really love to hear from you. And you've got all my contact details on my website, which is Elevar, spelled elevar.co.uk. And you can reach me there on WhatsApp, on LinkedIn, on all the usual social media channels. And it'd be great for you to pop in and say hello. I'd love to answer any questions or clarify anything that we've talked about today. And it'd just be great to connect and be in touch. So thank you, Walter. It's been such.
And I love the name. So it's like a rice up in Spanish, elevado. That's great. That's amazing. Yeah.
Thank you.
It was great having you, Rachel. And yeah, let's stay in contact.
I would love that. Walter, thank you so much. I've loved the conversation. Thank you.
Puedes escuchar Poder Aprender en las principales plataformas de podcast y en YouTube. También te invito a suscribirte al newsletter semanal en poderaprender.com para enterarte de los nuevos episodios del podcast y otras novedades para aprender mejor. En redes sociales, puedes buscar este podcast como Poder Aprender. Encontrá todos los links en la descripción. Y si te gusta mucho, si te sirve el contenido del podcast, te invito a dejar una reseña y una calificación de 5 estrellas en Spotify o Apple Podcasts para que estos episodios lleguen a más personas y que más gente pueda aprender mejor. Eso es todo por ahora. Nos vemos en un próximo episodio. Sigan aprendiendo y acuérdense de practicar bien.